supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, we all have our little obsessions and compulsions, from checking our emails to really craving that glass of wine when we get home at dinner, from needing to check with our kids or our parents daily. But for nearly 10% of the population, 12 and over, addiction is more than just a little obsession we can't stop. It can be an obsession that can spin our lives out of control. We're talking about 23 million Americans admitting to having an addiction of some sort, from gambling to compulsive overeating to sex and pornography, with a staggering 61 million people admitting to a nicotine addiction that feels out of control. It's a major public health problem that runs over $500 billion a year. So what can be done about addiction? What can be done about this compulsive voice inside our head? What are the new advances? What are the new treatments? And what does the horizon look like? Joining me now is Vince DiPasquale. He's the director and founder of Starting Point. It's an addiction treatment center in southern New Jersey. It treats various addictions in a multidisciplinary approach. Vince, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Our phone number is 888-477-9499. I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask Vince about, but it's essentially an open show. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your story, your history with addiction, or your concerns about your own compulsive behavior. Again, that's 888-477-9499. And please call early in the show. I have a feeling we'll get backed up as the show goes on. So, Vincent, you and I are friends, have been for quite a while, and I personally know that you've been in the addiction field since the late 1800s. So how did you get in the field?
Actually, I started working in the field in 1969. I did a lot of my training down at DRC in Philadelphia. But I basically founded Starting Point and went into this field while I was still a priest. I was a Catholic priest for 20 years, and I founded the Starting Point program while I was a priest. Basically, I look at Starting Point as not just a treatment center, but it's kind of my starting point, too.
How so?
Well, in the sense that it helped me to look at my addictive behavior patterns and begin to look at my major areas of addiction. For me, my core addiction is compulsive overeating. I've had to do a lot of work in that area. And also to be able to, my other core addiction is, of course, workaholism and codependency. And they all spin around the same addictions, but it all spins around that, what I refer to as, you know, not really having what I call a spiritual foundation for recovery, which is a basis for all addiction.
Well, you're bringing up a lot of issues here. I mean, you talk about codependency and work as being addiction. When we talk about addictions, Vince, it can be anything from gambling to drinking to internet sex to shopping. So what's the difference between these, and how do we understand what addiction really is? I mean, you know, we were throwing out the word for a while, rageaholic, people who are addicted to rage. So, you know, what is addiction?
Well, I think one of the problems, Dan, is that a lot of people don't really understand the foundations of addiction. When somebody actually begins to act out an addiction on a physical level, that addiction has been developing for a long period of time. The foundation of addiction actually begins on what we refer to in the program as a spiritual level, progresses to an emotional level, and is then acted out on a physical level. But just to kind of clarify for the listeners especially, we talk about the spiritual foundation, we're not talking about religion. We're talking about the actual meaning of the word spiritual and spirituality, which actually comes from Latin and Greek, and it means an awakening to a discovery of who I am as a person. So when somebody doesn't have the basic foundations for life, which come in their early years, then basically they migrate into these other areas, the emotional area, and then eventually they kind of self-medicate themselves in the physical area, be it drugs, alcohol, gambling.
Let me back you up again.
Sure.
On what you said, because that was just a lot. and I want to kind of deconstruct that a bit. If you're just joining us, we're having an open show about addiction today, and my guest is Vince DePasquale, director and founder of The Starting Point in Collingswood, New Jersey. Yes, Vince?
Actually, in Westmont. Right next to Collingswood.
Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Give us a call about anything related to addiction. Vince, I want to talk about Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Has an interesting definition of addiction. They say, this is a mouthful, so bear with me here.
Sure.
Here's how they define addiction. Use of substance or activity for the purpose of lessening pain or augmenting pleasure by a person who has lost control over the rate, frequency, or duration of its use, and whose life has become progressively unmanageable as a result. So how does that sit with you?
Well, it's a good definition of what I refer to as the last stages of addiction. But I think people basically don't take the time to go back and look at the core. See, one of the things that we talk a lot about, and it goes with relapse prevention work, is that if people don't go back and look at the roots and foundations of where addiction comes from, then basically they're going to end up, what we refer in the program as substituting addictions. Okay, they may put one down, but they'll bounce to another one, then to another one, then to another one, unless they go back and look at the behavior.
You seem to be arguing for a psychological cause for addiction, but I mean, we know a lot about the genetics and mm-hmm. the physiology,
right?
And many in the field have suggested that the majority of substance abusers have experienced childhood trauma. Do you agree? What are your thoughts about that?
I agree wholeheartedly. I really believe that the foundation for addiction begins in the first 7 to 10 years of your life. And many times it's interconnected with either shame, some sort of trauma, or some sort of a situation that where you basically haven't experienced what you were supposed to experience in those years. Just to give you a quick example, I do a whole workshop on this, but basically when the child comes into the world, the child has expectations, and the expectations are to feel safe, to be able to get unconditional love, to be able to have a sense of security, to be taught the skills of life, which basically are to play, to socialize, to be able to share, and to be given an identity. To me, I refer to those as the spiritual foundations of life. Now, if you don't get those things met in early childhood, if you're normal as a child of fear, guilt, if you come from an addictive home, dependency, or it could be abuse, it could be abandonment, it could be shame, it could be a lot of different things. So if you don't get your basic needs met as a child, then you're going to act out in frustration or in anger. And what happens to a lot of people is they go into that stage of crisis and conflict. That then becomes their normal. And because they can't deal with stuff or handle with traumas and things that occurred in their life, they end up self-medicating themselves.
Well, let me see if I can complicate it a bit.
Sure.
Because, self-medicated, one would almost have to have a genetic predisposition. I guess what I'm trying to say here, Vince, is certainly not everybody that grows up in a home where they feel neglected or are somewhat neglected are going to grow up to become addicts or going to act out necessarily. I mean, some of these kids become incredibly resilient.
Well, I think what happens is the core of all addiction is codependency. the core root. So therefore, what happens to a lot of people, if they don't act out in one of the addictions we talk about, they can act out in other ways, either by becoming overachievers, by becoming people that basically are able to excel in a lot of areas, but those areas then become addictions to them too, work and stuff to that effect. A lot of times, I mean, in my own life when I was in the priesthood, I realized now that the priesthood was a good cover for me. It was a place where I could hide and not really let anybody get too close to me, and I could bury a lot of my own feelings and stuff to that effect. So a lot of times people are, they have addictive behavior patterns, but they don't necessarily migrate towards a physical addiction. They may migrate towards an emotional addiction.
Let's go to the phones, Vince. We've got Robert on the line. Robert, hi.
Hi, Robert.
Oh, hi. Hi, Doctor. I'm calling to find out if what your opinion would be on Internet addiction, not so much Internet sex, but just Internet gaming and just being preoccupied with the Internet for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Robert, are you talking theoretically, or are you talking about yourself or loved
one? I'm talking about my spouse.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay, don't go away yet, okay? Hold on. I want to hear your reaction, Vince, and then I'll weigh in.
Anything can become an addiction. Internet addiction is probably becoming much more prevalent, not only in your situation, Robert, but also amongst young kids with the DSs and all the computer stuff that comes out today. We can bury ourselves and lose ourselves in that. It's almost like a fantasy. I can almost get a rush and a high from kind of a fantasy where I'm constantly into some sort of a piece of machinery. What I'm doing is I'm actually avoiding any type of intimacy or contact with human beings to share back and forth. You're going to see a lot more of this in the future, because I really believe that the Internet and a lot of the technology of today is going to become one of the key addictions of the future. So I feel that in that kind of a situation, you need to take a look at it. And if it's consuming that much of her life, then basically she needs to either try to get some help, or maybe you need to go talk to somebody on how to do kind of an intervention thing with her.
I am inclined to agree. I'm like Vince, Robert. I'm pretty concerned about the Internet. You know, Vince and I have been talking about physiology and genetics of addiction, but there are some substances that can, you know, turn a non-addictive brain into an addictive one. So substances like crack, and I don't want to compare the Internet to crack, although we do use words like crackberry. But the problem with the Internet is it gives you instant satisfaction, instant gratification. You can always get more. The price is pretty low for it, and there's always more there to consume. And people with addictive potentials are going to consume more and more to get the same level of satisfaction. So I'm concerned about it too. Robert, there's a few programs around the country that have actually inpatient units for Internet addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been trying to research some help. She's very defensive if I approach her with getting help, but I've been trying to research any kind of support groups or any kind of therapeutic way that I can, you know.
Well, first thing you want to research is support groups for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. And the other thing, you know, I read something in a book, Vincent and Robert, about families of addicts. And when you talk to someone who's addicted and you have these kind of confrontations, you think the problem is the addiction, and they think the problem is you. So that there's no communication between the two of you. You know, you can share your concerns with her, and Vince, I don't know how you feel, but maybe raise some questions about what's she missing in her life, what's she really looking for in her life, and maybe she'd be open to going into counseling along with you, Robert.
Well, Robert, also, if you want to, I know we can't do too much of it now, but if you want to give me a call, I'll gladly tell you some resources and give you some directions and some ideas on what to do. So feel free to give me a call at work, and I'll gladly try to help you in that direction.
I greatly appreciate that. If you can give me a number.
You can give it to us. What's the number there?
Okay, the number is 856-854-3155. 856-854-3155. And my extension is 102.
Okay.
Great. I will do that.
Robert,
thank you very much.
Robert, I wish you the best. Thanks so much for calling. I'm glad.
Thank you, Robert.
I'm glad we were here for you. Vince, we've got some callers here. I got a bunch more issues I want to bring up with you, but we're going to take a short break. All right, we're talking with Vince DePasquale. We're having an open show about addiction, and we want to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Do you have a history of addiction? Are you in recovery? And maybe you got yourself clean and sober without getting into treatment. We really would like to hear your story, or if you have a loved one who you feel is struggling with addiction, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY, headquartered in Philadelphia. Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to the health and well-being of nearly 3 million people throughout the Delaware Valley. Independence Blue Cross now offers individual health insurance plans, including preventative care, emergency care, and prescription drug coverage. Further details available online at ibx4u.com. Independence Blue Cross, here for you every step of the way.
I've got your picture that you gave to me.
Roseanne Cash was 18 when her father, Johnny Cash, wrote a list of songs he thought she should know. On the next Fresh Air, we hear some of those and talk with Roseanne Cash. Her new album is called The List. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're having an open show today about addiction and the many dimensions of it. My guest is Vince DePasquale. He's the director and founder of Starting Point in New Jersey. It's an outpatient treatment program that treats various addictions in a multidisciplinary approach. Vince, I want to talk about treatment. As you know, I spent a decade specializing in addiction, actually when you did, from 69 to 1980.
Right.
And back then, the treatment was essentially 12-step programs and detox, and people got better depending on their own motivation. And so how far have we come in 30 years?
Well, I think back then, if you go back to 69 and the early 70s, the primary addiction back then was alcohol. But since then, we have such a multifaceted concept today because of all the drugs and the designer drugs. And it's a different world in treating people today, because we basically are looking at most people that are either polyaddicted, dual addicted, and also people with a lot of mental health histories that are connected to addiction. So the field has changed completely. Also, what we found back in the 80s, when the whole phenomenon of codependency came out, we began to look at core roots and foundations and traumas. The whole addiction field completely changed. So I think today, the approach to addiction is something totally different, because we're noticing that most people that develop, you know, that we refer to as the addictive personality, may not come in here necessarily with an addiction. They may come in with a major anger issue or depression issue or something to that effect.
Well, what about other treatments? When way back when, all those years ago, they just came out with antabuse, and they just came out with methadone. I know you're not a physician, but there are lots of other ways now of looking at addictions.
I think the big thing right now is Suboxone. Okay, but I think that medically, you know, it's a detox process, but I think more and more they've moved away from a lot of that, and they're trying to get people clean, and they're trying to work more psychologically. And I think, thank God, today there's been the rise of the intensive outpatient programs. And what I find with most drug addicts and people that have very severe addictions. I mean, thank God we have long-term treatment programs today. Unfortunately, most of them are in the Florida area.
You mean long-term inpatient program?
Inpatient, that's correct.
Define long-term.
Long-term, usually for drug addiction, is anywhere from 90 days to 120 days. And for some people, it might even be up to a year.
So let me stop you there. And we know that improves the prognosis, or mm-hmm. we certainly think. How does one afford that? How does one stop their lives for 90 days? I mean, and are those facilities available to those who want it?
Well, in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, unfortunately, no, they're not available. I mean, unfortunately, we send a lot of our people now down to Florida because the longer-term programs are there, because they have a different set of regs in that area where insurance will cover things for a long period of time.
Health insurance will cover a program that long?
Well, it'll cover segments of it. How they do it down there is people can actually pay a rental fee. They pay a fee to live there, and then they continue doing their outpatient. But it's more like a therapeutic community outpatient.
So these have to be people with resources.
Yes. Or even now, though, it's interesting because a lot of the states are actually giving grants and foundations out for people for long term. Okay, as I said, we're not privy to a lot of this here. I mean, I even, believe it or not, I work 4 days a week in Florida in a rehab, and what a difference in the place I work in down there compared to up here.
How so?
Well, because a lot of the people down there are in treatment for at minimum 60 to 90 days.
Hmm.
Where up here, many of the insurances will get you 12 to 14 days. And a lot of the rehabs up here now are sending people out of state after they've served what they can serve on their insurance here. You know, but they work situations out. They have different phases of treatment.
Well, I just want to advise you and our listeners that the next 2 weeks we're doing a show on mental health, and first week will be on its impact on its families, but the following week, 2 weeks from now, we're going to be talking about policy and politics, and I'd be curious if healthcare reform has what it has in there for mental health and for addiction specifically. So
yes, so would I.
So tune in. Hopefully we'll find out. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Kathy on the line. Kathy, hi. You're on Voices.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I've been in a self-help, I guess, group for food addiction for a little over a year. And I guess a lot of the things that is it Dr. DePasquale has said about, you know, the core addictions and the spiritual awakening, I guess I've found, you know, is true with our group. And, you know, I've been depressed for probably 40 years, and I've been on, you know, antidepressant medications, anti-anxiety medications. But I have found that, you know, through this group of Food Addictions Anonymous, that I've been able to, like, get much more focus in my life and, lost a lot of weight. And I really, you know, believe that this approach with the codependency really does find a way to get to people to have support for each other and be able to eliminate some of their issues around their addiction.
Kathy, do you mind being more specific with us about you and your life, what you mean by codependency?
Well, I guess I find that I'm a real people pleaser. And if I am not pleasing all 100 people that are in my life at that moment, you know, I have this obsessive mind wondering what I did wrong, and I can't sleep at night at times because I'm, you know, worrying, how did I have, you know, did I call my parents, you know, enough? You know, what about my sister? What about my children's friends, parents?
So the food helps calm down your obsessive mind?
Yes.
And distract you from it?
Yeah, if I have an issue with work where I feel like I am, you know, I did something wrong in my job, so I would, like, go and eat food.
So, Kathy, tell us how this support group helps you with your obsessive mind.
Well, we have a lot of readings that we use also, and we go to meetings pretty frequently, too, and we listen to how everybody else is coping with some of these same issues in life. And you find out that it's not always right to isolate yourself and have the same thoughts and patterns in your mind about how to approach things repeatedly, that there might be a different way to look at things. And when you isolate and use addictive substances, you don't sometimes see things differently.
So one of the things that's happening, Kathy, that I hear and Vince, is that one of the things that happens is it takes shame and isolation out of the picture, which only makes everything worse.
Okay, you know, Kathy.
Yes.
First of all, I think we're related.
Okay.
Because you're telling my story, too. Because I'm a recovering food addict, and I know what that's all about.
Okay.
And I know that support systems do work.
Yes.
And I think the biggest thing, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, I think all of us are searching for a family to belong to where we'll be accepted and we'll be loved.
Uh-huh.
A place where we can be real, and also a place where we can, for the first time, know that we're not alone.
Right.
And to me, that's the biggest thing in the world. And to realize the fact that we've been covering up a lot of stuff for a long time, and now we don't have to have any secrets anymore. You know?
Yeah. And I think that's so true. I really, you know, people feel a comfort there, and they talk about all the things that they've been holding in for, you know, years and years. But I think the interesting thing is, too, there's also a strong approach in gratitude for what you do have in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I have, like, a much better relationship than with the people that used to drive me crazy before. I try to think about, well, what was my contribution to the problem?
Right.
And I don't, you know, and so I just look at them a little differently now, and I enjoy more people more frequently now, too.
That's great, now that you're taking less responsibility. Kathy, thanks so much.
Kathy, thanks a lot, Kathy.
Sure, okay.
God bless you, lady.
Thank you,
so, Vince, I got a problem, and I wonder if you can help me.
I'll try.
With my little problem here.
Okay.
I got a label problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, I am a food addict, and I am a codependent, and I am a alcoholic, and all these labels that we put on ourselves. I am a people pleaser. I am, you know, who are we? I mean, what are these labels really about? And aren't they ultimately delusions?
No. I think the thing you have to look at is fundamentally you're a person. You're a human being, and you have certain behavior characteristics that literally have affected you in one way or another. For example, I know that I have a food addiction, so therefore there's certain things I can do, certain things I can't do. I know that I have codependency behavior patterns, like Kathy was saying, the people-pleasing thing, worrying about what people think, things to that effect, you know, being able to finally talk about a lot of that stuff. They're also all behaviors. So it's not so much a label of who I am. I'm finding out who I really am. I'm finding out that I'm a beautiful human being. I'm a person. And that I have these little idiosyncrasies, and I have these behavior patterns. And one of the things, I do a lot of inner child work. I run a lot of inner child groups. And I try to teach people, it's not about looking at your past negatively. It's about being able to identify it and then being able to adjust it positively.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, this people-pleasing thing, you know, nothing gives me greater joy than, you know, seeing someone smile or seeing their heart open or, you know, gaining something from what I've given them. I don't have any greater joy in my life.
Right,
than that.
But look at something else. Look at the behavior and how it affects you. For example, just to give you a concept, I am my father. My father probably, Dan, you love him. He was probably the greatest guy in the face of the earth. He did everything for everybody. My father's only negative thing was never did a thing for himself. So I picked up all of his patterns, all of his behaviors. And my pattern was, if you want somebody to like you, do things for them. So what I had to learn was how to set boundaries and how to be able to make sure it took care of me in the process, too. I think all this stuff we're talking about, I mean, people-pleasing is wonderful to make people happy, but you got to make sure in the process that you don't do a disservice
well,
to yourself.
What I hear in as it filters through Dan's mind, as I listen to your father and I listen to you, that the path to freedom is about being able to tolerate your anxiety about not being liked.
Mm-hmm.
So once you're not so afraid of not being liked, then you're a lot more free.
Well, just to give you an idea, Dan, one of the things I really enjoyed doing, my second book I wrote was on childhood history, and I love it because one of the things I'm finding out is that we are our parents. We have their traits. We have their characteristics. The secret is not to beat ourselves up, but to be able to look at everything in life and try to look at the positive side of everything. And so we can learn from every experience.
Yeah.
So you know, just to give you a quick example, when I went to a doctor, and I'm going back now to the 80s, I went to a holistic health doctor who identified my eating disorder. He made a little statement to me, and he said that a lot of my eating disorder was connected to a lot of my rage, my anger, and my frustration that I was experiencing. If I got in touch with that, I would lose the weight. I thought he was nuts when he said it, but the man was right. Because I was carrying so much garbage inside of me, and it took me a long time to be able to loosen up a lot of that garbage.
Yeah, great, great example. Let's go to the phones. We've got Maria on the line. Maria?
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Maria.
Hi. I would just like to point out something that is extremely frustrating in my life. I come from an entire family that suffers from abuse of food, drugs, medication, alcohol, and it is extremely frustrating for me as a citizen of this country that we do not acknowledge the drug problem that we have, and if we acknowledge it in any way, it's through incarceration.
Well, we certainly acknowledge it, but I've got serious questions about how effectively we deal with it.
Right.
You know, we talk about it all the time, but our resources aren't great. You know, Vince, Maria's bringing up a cultural issue. You know, I mean, our prisons are filled with people who abuse and sell marijuana, and yet two of the most addictive drugs in the world, cigarettes and alcohol, are legal. So, you know, it's the way our culture looks at drugs and what's okay and what's not.
Well, I think one of the things too you have to understand, like I worked for years in the prison system as a chaplain, and a lot of the guys that were incarcerated for selling drugs will even tell you that with marijuana, a lot of times people are not really smoking marijuana, they're smoking cut marijuana. So many of the dealers refer to it as the come-on drug.
Right.
So what they do is they cut it with some speed, they cut it with other types of drugs, and that's their way of getting customers.
Yeah.
So basically, there's a lot more to the whole drug culture. When you really get into it, you really have to understand a lot of the craziness behind it.
Maria, I are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Maria.
I hear your anger, your frustration at the larger culture, but can you tell us what you need?
I think I would really benefit from some seeing in my life some positive movement to these problems.
Maria, can I share something with you?
Mm-hmm.
There's a program called Adult Children of Alcoholics. Okay, it's a 12-step program that deals with exactly what you're talking about. And if you have the opportunity, I don't know where you live, but if you have the opportunity, on Tuesday nights here at Starting Point, we have an ACOA, an Adult Children of Alcohol, and they're all people that come from homes and backgrounds where there's been alcohol or drugs or things to that effect. It's a tremendous support group. It's been around for a long time. And I think you'll meet a lot of your brothers and sisters that will give you a lot of support in that area.
And Maria, let me, I think that's a great idea. Let me suggest an additional one, okay?
Okay.
You're in this addiction soup at whatever level you're in. And what I hear you longing for is to see something positive.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you where to look. Instead of looking at the larger culture, look inside. Mm-hmm. You know, and the best way to break the bonds of addiction is to begin to live a life in which you can feel proud of yourself. You feel like you're contributing to the larger world, where do whatever you need to do so that you can lay your head down at night and feel that you've had a good day, that you've accomplished something, given something back to the world for the gifts you've received. And you do that one day, and then you'll begin to see something positive that comes out of this addiction.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm smiling right now because I think that's the only way that I've even got this far.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Don't be afraid to get help for yourself. It's the most important thing, and to work on you. You know, I learned something the hard way. You know, I'll tell you a standing joke that I had. You know, when I got ordained a priest in 66, I was going to save the world. It took me to 1985 to figure out maybe I better work on me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all I can do is, you know, all you can do is work on yourself and take care of yourself as a person. And then the energy from you will go out to other people.
Maria, thanks so much for your call. And I got to tell you,
the
people pleaser in me is pretty happy that I heard you smiling just now. So take care, and enjoy your day. We're talking about addiction today with Vince DePasquale. He's the director and founder of Starting Point in New Jersey. It's an open show, so you can call us at 888-477-9499. We'll be back after a very short break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Princeton University Art Museum supports WHYY and presents Gifts from the Ancestors, Ancient Ivories of Bering Strait, now through January 10th. The exhibition offers an opportunity to discover the art of the Arctic's ancient hunters through nearly 200 works of ivory carving, including recent Russian excavations on view for the first time in North America. For details, artmuseum.princeton.edu or 609-258-3788.
Circulation is dropping, reporters are being laid off, and some newspapers are shutting down altogether. U.S. Senator Ben Cardin says it's time for Congress to step in.
The Newspaper Revitalization Act offers an opportunity to save our local papers.
But others say it's too little, too late. What's the matter with the American media? What can help? That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We're having an open show about addiction. My guest is Vince DePasquale. He's director and founder of Starting Point in New Jersey. Vince, let's go right back to the phones.
Okay.
We've got Rich on the line.
Hello, doctor?
Yes.
Dr. Dan, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I am currently having a difficulty with OxyContin. I spent 2 years now on it after a year of protestation about even starting on it. And I'm wondering if there's a detoxifying without having to go into a program. I'm under a doctor's care, and I've worked down from 80 to 60 to 40 and down to 30 at this point in time.
Rich, I'm sorry. We're going to have to let you go because we've got such a bad connection. We will try to answer your question best we can, and if there's a way you can call us back on a landline, we'll continue the discussion. And I'm sorry to cut you off. So, Vince.
Well, let me just share one thing with him if he's still on the air.
He's not.
Okay, well, you can tell him that we do have a program here where we can detox off OxyContin, and we do have a psychiatrist and a intensive outpatient program. We deal with a lot of that every day.
Well, and if he's nowhere near New Jersey, are there programs
there
in
are.
General? And for a program like that, where the physiology is so complicated, mm-hmm. Should that require inpatient program?
It can be done outpatient. A lot of times they use Suboxone to take them off the Oxycontin and then take them off of that. There's a lot of different areas, but what you can tell him to do is tell him, feel free to give me a call, and I can, wherever he is, I could, my networking area is pretty wide.
So he does not necessarily have to go inpatient?
Not necessarily,
And
no.
What do we know about the prognosis with all of these addictions? Have we gotten any further over the years with outcome?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is the National Association on Drugs and Alcohol and Alcoholism, their concept is 40-40-20. It's usually how they break it down. They say that 40% of people make it into some sort of projected recovery. It's hard to judge, you know, if somebody stays completely. And they say that 40% end up with major issues, maybe incarceration, or they end up with and mental hospitals or things of that effect. And unfortunately, they say 2 out of 10, you know, can lose their life from addiction.
Boy, that's not a real good outcome. That doesn't speak well for treatment quality.
Well, a lot of people in that other 40%, they end up being in institutionalized. Unfortunately, with a lot of the designer drugs and many of the drugs of today, people do end up with brain damage. They end up with a lot of other complications that come from the drugs themselves. So, I mean, it's a whole different area.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Dan on the line. Dan, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Dan.
Do we have you, Dan? No.
Okay.
I guess we don't. Let's see if we can go to Alex. Alex.
Hi,
Alex.
Can you hear me well?
Yeah, there's something in the background there. Do you have your radio on?
I'm talking. No, that's my little boy talking.
Oh, okay.
If I may, because I've waited, I couldn't wait to speak. I have an almost 12-year-old son, and my son is an addictive personality from day one. You know, cracking the knuckles, cracking the neck, overeating. Everything is over. Internet. If I may also say, right now he's discovered masturbation. Now we have that over. My fear is that I have someone who, and there is no trauma, there is no addiction in the family, no alcoholism, no drug abuse, nothing. I pay a lot of attention to my son, although I have three. He takes all of my time. Very bright boy. He's been diagnosed with ADHD. However, how do I, before it becomes a problem, before it becomes an addiction to something much more serious, what are my options? Is your clinic one of those
that can
help me?
Can I weigh in? Here's an area where Vince and I might disagree. Before I start labeling your son an addict to anything, I would not go the way of addiction with him. If he's been doing this his whole life, it sounds like he's got an anxiety disorder in addition to perhaps ADHD. I don't know, even know if he's got that. He's got an anxiety disorder. I would give a wild guess that he's not the only one in the family that suffers from an anxiety disorder. And the behavior you're seeing is a variant on obsessive compulsive disorder. And I would have him treated. Now, the prognosis is pretty good for kids with OCD. And if my label is right, and heaven knows I should not diagnose with such little information. But first I would take him to get a really good psychological workup. And then I would, if I'm right, I would take him for treatment to an anxiety disorders program, a childhood anxiety disorders program. I know there's one at Hahnemann. I know there's the anxiety and agoraphobia program in Ballard-Kinwood. I know there's one at Temple, and I'm sure there are others. But that's where I would go first. It's like Vince talked about with the addiction. The real treatment is to find out what's going on underneath the behavior first, and that's where I would go.
How old is your son?
And I heard he's almost 12. if there was a trauma. But I've seen this my son flushing.
No, Alex, Alex, this is probably in the hard wiring. Don't look for trauma. Anxiety disorders don't necessarily come from trauma. Okay.
Yeah, get him evaluated, like Dr. Gottlieb said. Get him evaluated. Find out what's really going on, you know, and to help deal with that too for yourself, because I know you're going through a lot. You know, you may need some help yourself
to help you handle that
and deal with it. So, you know, if you need help in that direction, don't be afraid to give us a call.
Yeah, that's
we can
that's
really a, help you.
That's yeah, she should take care of herself in this process. Alex, I do want to say one other thing about the evaluation. If you take him to a mental health professional who sits across a desk from him and talks for 45 or 50 minutes, that's not an evaluation. I want him to get an extensive psychological workup. It could take several hours of paper and pencil testing, of verbal discussion, somebody who also interviews you and the teachers at school. That's an evaluation. That's an extensive evaluation. And hopefully that kind of evaluation will give you the kind of guidance you need. So I hope that's helpful, and I'm really happy that you called in the show. Vince, let's go back to the phones.
Sure.
Okay, we've got lots of people here. We've got Debbie on the line. Debbie, hi, you're on voice.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Dr. Gottlieb. I listen to you often.
Thank you.
I have a question about my daughter. She is... We adopted her when she was 3 years old. We were a foster family. She came to live in our house about at 18 months. And she's been in therapy for about 6 years now. She's 15, and she has an eating disorder. And we think that it is exactly what you were talking about, the eating disorder, where she's eating to push down anger and pain that she had when she was in trauma at the first year of her life. But what we're trying to do is find ways to help her. And I'm looking for a program that deals with this. We tried Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers doesn't work because it doesn't deal with the emotional piece. So I'm looking for a program that would deal with the emotional piece, but also deal with the idea that she's 15 years old.
I can help you with that one, because we have a fantastic therapist on our staff that works primarily with teenagers and eating disorders.
Yes.
Okay, she's really... Her name is Ann Cavalier.
Okay, hold on for a minute.
And
this is her specialty area, teenagers. Okay, she works with anorexia, compulsive overeating, bulimia. Well,
where is she located?
Well,
we're in Westmont.
Yeah, that's Vince's program, and we'll give out the number again at the close of the show. But there are a lot of places around. If you don't live near New Jersey, there's a lot of places around.
You can give Anna a call, and she knows the whole field of that area you're talking about. She can recommend people to you.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot.
We couldn't find places, especially with the insurance piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a complication. You could call Vince, or you could call or email me. There's lots of good therapists for young people, and there's lots of good programs around. I would also keep something else in mind, Debbie, about your daughter. She was isolated as a child. She felt different probably her whole life and not connected fully to a family.
That's correct.
All right. In a way, she needs treatment badly, and she needs exactly the kind of treatment you and Vince are talking about. In a way, sending her off for individual therapy could exacerbate her sense of being alone in the world. So my recommendation would be to just think about supplementing whatever therapy she has with family therapy.
We do have that now.
Okay, good.
We have family-based therapy. We just started it about a month ago.
Yeah, because you always have to keep that in mind when you're treating kids, because they really are part of a system.
Yes.
All right, Debbie, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. I want to talk about the issue before we go, Vince, this whole issue of stigma. People say that, you know, it boils down to willpower, and people who are addicted are not strong. They're weak people. There's a program out there that says people are not responsible for their addiction, but they are responsible for their recovery. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree in two areas. I think that basically willpower doesn't work when it comes to addiction. It never has worked and never will work, because you're talking about a compulsion. Secondly, the core of recovery are dealing with two major areas, reality and responsibility. Hmm. So we are responsible for our behavior, okay? But basically, we have to be able to use that behavior as a kickoff point to move us into our recovery.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it. Vince, I want to thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
And have a great day, Guy.
Okay, take care.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
My guest has been Vince DePasquale. He's director and founder of Starting Point in Westmont, New Jersey. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're starting a two-part series about living with mental illness. Next week, we'll be talking about its impact on the family. And the week after, we're going to be talking about policy, politics, what programs are in place. Hey, join me tomorrow in my web chat, philly.com/askdan. We're going to be talking about loving the parents we have, rather than trying to turn them into the parents we want. I know. Good luck with that. Well, if you've got a question or show idea, comment, email us. We're at voices@whyy.org. And you can reach me directly at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer for audio content at WHYY. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Stephanie Marutis was our producer for today's show and did a particularly good job today. Alisa Walters is our associate producer. Our intern, that's Jonathan Glick. Yuna Kwan is our volunteer. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, the host. Enjoy your week, my friends. Go Phillies.
You've been listening to